Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Many political analysts were completely surprised by the result of the 2016 presidential election, but our guest this hour probably wasn't. In fact, after the election returns rolled in, he was very quickly able to write a post-election piece because it was preceded by months of deep reporter analysis from Ohio, where he met many people who had never voted before, some who had voted for Obama in previous elections. ProPublica reporter Alec McGillis is our guest this hour, and he just won this year's very prestigious George Polk Award in the National Reporting category for his portfolio of stories on the roots of the 2016 political season, including reporting on the revolt of the white working class. He traveled to Ohio, traveled to other parts of the country, and lots of reporting from the Dayton area, which shows how it transformed from a longtime base for political moderates into a Donald Trump stronghold. We'll be talking about all of his reporting this hour of the program and welcoming your phone calls as well. First, may I remind you, we're in our winter pledge drive, so it's a very important time for you to support us, and we hope you'll choose to do so. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And keep a couple numbers in your head, because if you'd like to join our conversation with Alec, our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Alec, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
And congratulations on the award. It's very prestigious, and you must feel good about it.
Oh, no, it's a real honor. It's a very, very, you know, highly regarded award. And I remember when I was a young reporter at the Baltimore Sun years ago, a colleague of mine who I respected a great deal won the Polk Award for a big investigative series he had done back then. And ever since then, I've really held it in a lot of high esteem. So it's a real honor.
I would imagine. But it involves so much hard work. When we read your articles, they're very detailed. You go to the Dayton area, to other parts of the country, to really talk with people. And you had a sense, I think this is fair to say, that a lot of people were left with their jaws open after the election to see the results, because nobody saw it coming. But you maybe did.
Well, I saw part of it coming. I still expected Hillary Clinton to pull it out, because I thought that what I saw coming was this big surge of this, you know, so-called white working class support for Donald Trump. I saw that happening in places like Dayton, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, and other places where I was the last couple of years. So I saw that there was going to be this switch of a lot of people who had voted for Barack Obama who were going to vote for Donald Trump in that white working class, as hard as that was to believe. And I also saw this movement of people who had not voted at all, people sort of coming out of the woodwork to vote for Donald Trump. What I thought was going to counterbalance that enough for Hillary Clinton still to pull it out was that I thought there were going to be more people, more suburban, moderate Republican types who had voted for Mitt Romney, college-educated Republicans in places like, you know, the Milwaukee suburbs, who were going to switch over to vote for Hillary Clinton because they couldn't abide Donald Trump and were scared of him. That happened to some degree, but not as much as I and many others expected. And so it was really the combination of those two things, the big white working class surge for Trump, and then the fact that there wasn't enough of a countervailing movement of suburban Republicans in places like the Milwaukee suburbs to cancel that out.
Mm-hmm. It was amazing to me how many people you ran into who had never voted, or people who had not voted for 25 years. One gentleman you write about, a handyman in his 70s, you met at a Trump rally, who was voting for the first time.
Yeah, I kept meeting these sorts of people. It was extraordinary. I mean, to think of that, to go decades without voting. And, you know, we forget just how many, you know, we there are these numbers that you hear about how few people in this country vote, but we don't focus on those numbers a lot and what they really mean. And just to think about how many people in this country are truly off the grid politically, or just not in the game. And Trump did manage to pull in a fair number of these people. There was one woman in just outside Dayton who I met, who was in her 40s, and she had also never voted before. She'd been in the armed forces for a while, and now she worked as a clerk at a gas station. And And I asked her why she never voted before, and she said, I never trusted myself to vote. I never thought that I had that I knew enough about the issues to vote. I didn't feel qualified to vote. Donald Trump is the first person who makes things, puts things simply enough for me to understand. There was just, it was a very kind of poignant sort of self-awareness about her, the way she talked about her support for Trump. There were other people who similarly sort of self-aware would, as they were describing to me why they thought the things they did politically, would apologize for their lack of knowledge, for their lack of political knowledge. They would be, they were very self-aware about sort of how spotty their information sources were and how sort of loosely grounded their political beliefs were. But that was not going to keep them from voting for Trump.
Mm-hmm. Also, people who had to work very, very hard with taking care of kids and
exactly.
working jobs.
Right.
Who has time to keep up with what's going on politically, right?
Right. No, they were, and it's hard to, there's not much time, and then there's also just not many, in a lot of these communities, there's a real dearth of simply of news. I mean, you have, as local news has declined,
yes.
it's such a, you know, a really terrible trend, you have fewer of those sort of local outlets that people can rely on. They end up, all they end up getting are sort of these national media that they sort of can tune out or they don't trust. But those sort of local sources are more and more, you know, hard to find, and so people are kind of left floating in this sea of non-information and sort of bad information.
Mm-hmm. There also is a great deal of anger. Now, let's go to Hillary Clinton first. You write a lot about how President Obama was successful in his run because he had a clearly defined, I'm on your side kind of message. And she had that kind of message and really performed much better than he did in some of these areas back in 2008. But come 2016, she's been in the State Department. She's making speeches that are getting her millions of dollars from Wall Street, you know, billionaires, and nothing's done to penalize all those people who ripped people off in 2008 and caused the Great Recession. So she's very much out of touch and has a different kind of message, which is you can't vote for Donald Trump because he's a disaster.
Exactly. It's really one of the great ironies of the campaign that she, Hillary Clinton, crushed Barack Obama in a lot of the areas back in 2008, the 2008 primary, and a lot of those areas where she did so badly this year. And so back then, she was seen as the person who was sort of more on the side of these voters, and they went with her. Barack Obama was, you know, seen as kind of, you know, exotic and sort of foreign entity. But then in the actual presidential campaign in 2008 and 12, Obama did surprisingly well in a lot of these places. You know, we talk so much about how he struggled with the white working class. Well, in fact, he did pretty darn well with the white working class in a lot of northern states, places like Wisconsin and Iowa and Michigan, and where voters were, a lot of voters held true to their sort of Democratic roots, saw him as someone who, however exotic, was on their side, certainly more on their side than Mitt Romney, the private equity guy, and that was the whole message in 2012. That's how he managed to win, despite things still being pretty rocky with the economy. But in 2016, Hillary Clinton was unable to replicate that, and it has partly to do with the fact that she was running against someone who, while a billionaire or, you know, so self-described billionaire, was so completely pitched to that working class. I mean, his message was so geared toward these voters, you know, including some you know, parts of the message that were not so pretty, that tapped into some sort of some pretty ugly stuff, and so she was running up against that challenge. But at the same time, her own profile was not helpful. She did spend the last couple of years before the election, this election, going around giving incredibly high paid speeches, making, I think, $18 million in all on the speaking circuit. And instead of sort of preparing to run in a different way, to you know, going around to all these small towns and sort of introducing herself, going that route, she instead went the big money route, and it ended up really serving her poorly when it came time to run against this you know, so-called populist, Donald mm-hmm. Trump.
The news about Donald Trump's possible sexual assaults, his trying to have an affair with a married woman, that news was coming out as you were traveling around Dayton and you were talking to some Trump supporters about that, whether or not that made a difference, what they thought of that. What did they say?
Oh, they just, I was sure that news, I and so many others were sure that news would really be kind of a death knell for Trump. It was just so... That clip was so shocking, and but what I found was that was simply not the case. That a lot of voters just tuned it out because for them it was just one more thing that the national media that scorned, contemptible national media was making a big deal about. And almost by definition, anything that the national media was hyperventilating about and making a big deal about and fainting about was something to be dismissed. That was sort of how you showed that you showed your sort of your scorn for that national media that is held in such low esteem by just dismissing anything that they were worked up about. And I found this even with. Sort of incredibly, even with a lot of women voters who just shrugged it off. Oh, that's what, that's all men talk like that. Heck, I even talk like that when I'm alone with my girlfriends. I had an extraordinary interview, long interview in Dayton, Ohio, with a woman who is a union steel worker. Sorry, not steel worker. She's an operating engineer, heavy construction worker. And someone who really ought to have been voting for, if you just looked at her profile, you would think she'd be voting for Hillary Clinton. She was in the union. She was a woman. She's a single mother and experienced sexual harassment and discrimination over the years. Mm-hmm. Just sort of the ideal Hillary Clinton voter. But instead, she loathed Hillary Clinton. And when I then called her back up to check in about after that clip came out of Trump speaking so profanely, she said, "Oh no, I'm still completely with him." And she said, "Just today, in fact, I was making a joke about his comments when I was working with all my male colleagues at a construction site near Dayton, and was sort of like making a profane joke about it and guffawing about it. To her, it was all just a big joke."
Alec MacGillis is our guest this hour. He has just won the George Polk Award, prestigious award in journalism, and he covers politics and government for ProPublica. He won it for his series of stories during the 2016 presidential campaign. He's also written for The New Republic, spent 5 years as national reporter for The Washington Post, where he was part of the team whose coverage of the Virginia Tech shooting won the 2008 Pulitzer Prize for breaking news. He's been at the Baltimore Sun, and his reporting is very thorough. He spent months on the ground, and really before most of the rest of the country knew what was going on in this election, he had a sense of what was happening because he had talked to people who had voted for the first time. 70-year-olds voted for the first time. People who hadn't voted for 25 years. Trump spoke to many of the people that he writes about. We welcome your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. But we have a busy hour because we also are right in the middle of our Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive, and I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian. It's a chance to show your support for all of the programs that you listen to throughout the year. So please take the step of donation to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hello, Lisa.
Well, last hour we heard from 18 listeners, so thank you so much to everyone who pledged. This hour is a brand new hour, and we have a brand new goal of 25 pledges. And all of these hourly goals that you hear us talk about are so important. They help us stay on track financially so we can help keep these conversations and these discussions going strong all the time on WPR.
And I think you know by now, but this is really a big deal that 2017 2018 marks 100 years of broadcasting for WPR, and the winter membership drive is a great time to celebrate with us. So support all of the programs that have made your day for many, many years and will make your days for many years to come. Support us with your centennial gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I love the sound of that, centennial gift.
Yeah,
it just sounds
great,
so
isn't
stately.
It does.
Yeah. So people who listen, people just like you, provide the most significant share of WPR's budget. Your donation is an investment in Wisconsin Public Radio and in the programs that deliver the greatest value to you.
Your contribution keeps independent public service radio on the air for you and for the whole community. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Another option that a lot of people like is becoming a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio. So you'll set up comfortable monthly payments from your bank account or credit card, and your support goes right to work toward the programming that you appreciate and rely on.
And because your sustaining donation automatically renews every year, it means your support will always be current. You don't have to wonder if it's your time to give every time you hear a pledge drive. So become a sustainer right now with a gift of $5, $10 a month. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
This membership drive is the first of our centennial year, and we have something special for you. Your gift of any amount automatically enters you in a drawing for a WPR fandom package. It's our way of saying thanks for your support. This package is perfect for any WPR enthusiast. It includes top-notch electronics, tickets to an event featuring On Point's Tom Ashbrook, with added perks like dinner and an overnight stay in Milwaukee, and a bunch of great WPR swag. Find the details online at WPR.org, and sustainers, you're automatically entered. Make your gift now, you'll support the programs you love, and get entered in the drawing at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you missed it, it's WPR.org, 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and we are asking for your support of WPR. Your gift might be $10, $15 a month. We thank you for your gift.
WPR is personally important to you. It's why you're listening. And it's probably also important for you that everyone in the state has access to this high-quality information and entertainment.
So become a member with a contribution of $5 or $10 a month, and you're not only doing something good for yourself, you are doing something good for the whole community. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
A couple of pledge drives ago, a listener made their donation and told the folks, well, you know, we could live without WPR, but we sure wouldn't want to. And I'm guessing you feel the same way, that listening to WPR just simply makes your life better.
And you use it to keep up with the news, which is rapid fire, the laughs you get from weekend shows, the fascinating discussions that happen every single day on the Ideas Network. There's always something important to listen to.
Because WPR makes your life better, help fund it. Help keep it going. Your pledge of support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
We're looking, Lisa, for 21 more pledges in the next about 36 minutes. Give to WPR to support the station you love, your public radio.
Thank you if you've already given. And if you haven't, help pay for the programs you enjoy by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Think about what you spend a dollar a day on. Coffee, your phone, newspaper. You spend more for a newspaper. A snack from the vending machine. It's pretty easy to spend a dollar a day on something that's part of your daily routine.
That's true. What about Wisconsin Public Radio? WPR is your daily news source, your conversation starter, a place where you go to learn more. It's your public radio. Support it today and every day. Give a dollar a day. That's $30 or $31 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you've already renewed or you make ongoing monthly gifts as a sustainer, we certainly thank you. Listeners who renew and monthly sustainers are the backbone of WPR.
If you haven't given yet, join thousands of other wonderful WPR members by donating. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And 21 more pledges still to go in about 33 minutes. Mm-hmm. 2017 marks 100 years. We're really proud of this, of Wisconsin Public Radio. Listeners, you make this possible. So it's your gift that will help ensure a bright future for the programs you rely on every day. Make your centennial gift now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And for this pledge drive, make sure to ask for your WPR t-shirt. Show your pride for the radio you love when you give about $10 a month or more. You do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And I should say, too, when you give, you're entered into the drawing for the WPR fan package.
Nice.
Yes.
All right. So it means now is a great time to give or become a sustaining member. You can set up convenient and ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. Get started. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Lynn from La Crosse says, I have one TV in my home, but five radios. Since my husband's passing, I have WPR on all day for company and information. Yes, I talk back to my radio. Thank you so much, Lynn.
Five radios. You can never have too many radios.
I agree. One in every room.
Absolutely. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, everybody, for all of your support. This is the Ideas Network. Alec McGillis is our guest. He covers politics and government for ProPublica. He has just won the George Polk Award for his remarkable coverage of the 2016 presidential campaign. All of his writing is well worth reading, deeply sourced, and extremely well written. Our phone number on air for Alec is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And we start our calls with Mike in Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a sustaining member, and I really enjoy WPR.
Thanks,
but
Mike.
But my question is, and I hope I can make it concisely, you know, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I voted for Hillary Clinton. I couldn't, and I looked at Trump, and I couldn't, I guess, a major concern with him is that he's going to go along was then and is now is that he was going to go along with the Ryan point of view and cut my Social Security benefits and Medicare benefits, and I'm retired and I'm dependent on those. So I guess my question is, why would somebody vote for Trump when it appeared then to me and appears even clearer now that he's going to go, you know, lock and step along with Paul Ryan's way of thinking. I'll take my answer.
All right, Mike.
There.
Thanks so much for the call. Alec.
Well, that's a good question, Mike. What's interesting about the campaign is that Trump managed to avoid a lot of scrutiny on this very question of Social Security and Medicare cuts because he claimed, when asked about the subject, that he was not going to touch those programs. He was especially adamant about Social Security, but also about Medicare, and but now of course we see him we see the simple reality that he's the president with Paul Ryan as Wisconsin's own Paul Ryan as Speaker of the House, and Paul Ryan has been very clear over the years about his desire to overhaul those programs, especially Medicare, and move Medicare more in a sort of privatization direction where you have, instead of basically what we have now, kind of a single-payer government program, you'd have something with private insurance companies getting subsidies to provide insurance to older folks. And the question is now, will Trump, if those sorts of bills were to make it to the White House, would Trump sign them? I'm still kind of surprised, looking back at the election, that Hillary Clinton did not attack Trump more on this subject, that to not let him just get off the subject by saying, oh well, don't worry, I'm not going to touch those things. Well, the fact is that if he became president, he was going to be president with leading a Republican government of Republican legislators, including Paul Ryan, who very very much do want to touch those programs, and was he really going to not let them do that? And now we're going to see see that tested. It's mystifying to me that Hillary didn't make a bigger issue out of that.
It's also mystifying that she didn't go to Dayton, Ohio, and she didn't come to Wisconsin.
That is also true. It's remarkable that she did not make it to Wisconsin once in the general election. They really did not think they had anything to worry about in states like Wisconsin and Michigan, and they were just very wrong about that. I think that the fact of the visit alone, who knows how much one of those visits alone brings, especially if you're a less than scintillating campaigner like Hillary was. But the bigger issue was that it was just how much they were investing in those states resource-wise and organizing-wise, and it was clearly not enough.
Mm-hmm. You spoke with, I love all the conversations that you had with so many people, particularly in Ohio. You probably heard this more than once, but you talk about a conversation you were having at a, this is so sad, at a graduation ceremony for opiate addicts who had gone through a recovery program. There were four women still in the program. One of them was talking about Clinton being investigated by the FBI, and a lot of people were very concerned about that. She said there's a reason for it, and yet now you have Donald Trump being investigated by the FBI for possible Russian collusion in the election. I'm wondering, it seems as though a lot of that doesn't get through to a lot of people who are voting for Trump, or there doesn't seem to be the same amount of outrage as there was about Hillary Clinton and her email server. Well, what's going on there?
Well, what's going on there is, part of it is that we did not know that how much Trump was being investigated for the Russian connections, because the FBI chose not to tell us that, whereas they did choose to tell us about Hillary, the investigation to Hillary's emails. I was at that drug recovery graduation right after Jim Comey sent his letter to Congress saying that he reopened the investigation into the emails. This young woman said, of course I'm voting for Trump, because she was another one, by the way, who had never voted before. And she said, I'm voting for Trump because Hillary's being investigated by the FBI, and if she's being investigated by the FBI, there must be something there. For her, that letter had a real impact, and there's just no question, if you look at the numbers, that letter had a big impact across the swing states. There was a clear drop in Hillary's polling after that letter came out. There was several days of all this news about, oh, the investigation's back open, what's going to happen, could she be indicted, blah, blah, blah. And it completely stalled. She had a real momentum in that moment in the campaign before that letter came out. There were polls showing her up double digits. Even if those polls were slightly inflated, there's just no question that she had a solid lead at that point. And there was a lot of talk about how much damage Trump was going to do down ballot to other Republicans. Trump himself was starting to talk about maybe losing, which he'd never done before. And then that letter came out, and it completely shifted the momentum. I mean, it's just... we cannot, for all that I've written about the white working class and all the forces driving the white working class to vote for Trump and all that, there is no question in my mind that this election was decided by the Comey letter. Yeah, you had three states that were decided by such a slight, such a tiny margin: Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And it just doesn't take that letter was more than enough to make that. Margin. The voters who I think it had a particular impact on were those voters I mentioned earlier, the suburban Republican, moderate, college-educated Republicans who really couldn't abide Donald Trump, but were scared of Donald Trump, but were also really didn't like Hillary Clinton, and so partly felt like, well, I should vote for Hillary to stop Donald Trump, but man, I can't stand her. And then along comes the director of the FBI saying, well, you know, we're investigating Hillary Clinton still. And it, I think for a lot of those voters, it gave them an excuse to vote for Donald Trump or maybe not, maybe just stay home and not vote for Hillary. But it was licensed for them to sort of not do their duty to stop Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. We have a number of other calls coming in, and we'll take them momentarily. So stay with us. Listener Helen has an interesting comment. Since Alec is well-tuned into the messaging that many voters seem to support, is there anyone on the scene today, a Democrat, who you think could resonate with these same voters? We'll get to his response to that. We'll talk about the hand-wringing among Democrats about the party's declining support among white working-class voters, which really goes back a long time. By this year, he writes, many liberals have gotten so fed up with hearing about these woebegone voters and their political needs that they were openly declaring them a lost cause. And we'll take more phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. This is also the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian. And our goal is to keep bringing you topics. We've done a lot of political discussions. It's been quite a year for political discussions. Your support makes all of this happen. So please give now. Any amount makes a difference. WPR.org, 888-202-2552 is the number.
We've seen about 10 pledges come in.
Thanks, everybody.
So much. So we need about 15 more pledges in the next 25 minutes this hour. Your support, we've said it before, it keeps WPR strong and helps pay for the Kathleen Dunn Show. So make your gift right now at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And you don't get a show like this anywhere else. This show is possible pledge by pledge only on WPR's listener-supported Ideas Network. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And really the best thing is that giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is super easy. It just takes a couple of minutes to make your contribution, and you'll get so much back. You can also make your 9XM leadership gift, and those are gifts of $100 a month or $1,200 a year or more.
That comes down to less than $4 a day, and it makes the talk, the news, music, and entertainment all possible. Your 9XM leadership gift makes Wisconsin Public Radio possible today and for future generations. So please give as generously as you can. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And you might already have a sense that your tax dollars, both at the federal and state level, support WPR. And you're right, they do, and we thank you for that.
But listener support, this is important to know, mm-hmm. is actually the single biggest piece of our operating budget. You make the difference. You make the quality and variety of programs on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Because we matter to you, make a personal contribution to pay for the programs that you listen to. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
So I've been living in Wisconsin for roughly the last 20 years. I came here for school. I think I became a member when I was in my mid-20s. Whenever I could, I would try to send $20 or something and whatever I could manage at that time. I've always imagined that it would be fun to be a philanthropist. And if I thought something was really a wonderful cause that I could give them $1 million, just, you know, open my checkbook. There are not nearly as many zeros involved, but in a small way, I'm a small-scale philanthropist. It definitely feels like money that's going to a good cause. When I became a sustainer, it felt like there was an additional connection. To me, it's a no-brainer. When I became a sustainer, it just made things that much better. Sort of like the way it felt when I got married a couple years ago. I loved him a lot, but when I married him, it felt even that much better. My name is Lisa, and I live in Monona, Wisconsin. I really enjoy being a sustainer, and I encourage you to do the same.
And you can make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org, 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio during our winter membership drive. Your pledge might be $5 a month. It might be $100 a month. We appreciate your gift.
Wisconsin Public Radio, you may know this, is turning 100 this year.
Unbelievable.
I know.
It's great.
It really is. And we have such an amazing history, and we've done so much, and we're just as excited about our future. We pledge to deepen our commitment to providing equal access to the news, to information and entertainment that creates opportunities for everybody.
And we're going beyond broadcast through new technologies and community projects to better serve and also to connect the people of Wisconsin. We have some big goals, and your support will make all of that possible. It's an exciting time to be a part of WPR. So please A gift now from you would be so appreciated. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
We're looking for 14 more pledges in about the next 20 minutes or so. Your gift right now is so important. Support the programs you rely on every day.
You are part of Wisconsin Public Radio's community of listeners, and maybe you have been for a long time, and now you can become part of our community of members, people who support the programs they value.
That's right, and if you've never given before, you might want to start with a pledge of, say, $5 or $10 a month. Your pledge of any amount makes you a member. It all starts with your gift right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
What does making a pledge mean? A pledge is a promise, and we pledge to bring you, we really do, great shows every day. You pledge to support them with a contribution in any amount.
You help pay for the cost of the station, and we'll make sure there's something interesting for you to listen to. That's our pledge. Now make yours at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And Lisa, we are looking for 13 more pledges in about 20 minutes or so. This is the first drive of our centennial year. We are off to a great start. Let's keep it going. Your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 will give us a strong start for the next 100 years.
Show us your support for Wisconsin Public Radio with a WPR t-shirt. It's yours when you give $10 a month or more. You can do that at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. And remember, your gift of any amount is your chance to win the WPR fan package.
If you're a sustaining member, thank you so much. Make today the day that you increase your support by perhaps $5 a month or whatever amount you choose. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Robert from Menominee, Michigan says, I enjoy and appreciate your programming. I grew up listening to public radio in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Thanks to my mother. Please keep up your good work. Thank you so much, Robert.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for all of your support. We need you. 888-202-2552. Thank you, Lisa. This is the Ideas Network. Our guest is Alec McGillis. He covers politics and government for ProPublica, and his reporting, insightful, important, on-the-ground reporting from Rust Belt areas in this country during the 2016 presidential campaign, recently won him the very prestigious George Polk Award. We have tons of calls coming in. Let's go to Jacqueline in Milwaukee. Hi, Jacqueline.
Hi. First off, I agree with what you said about Comey, but my concern was, and still is, the Democrats continue to focus on identity politics, the gay marriage, transgender bathroom issue, racial issues, and this just did not resonate with the people who were saying, yeah, but what about jobs? What about good-paying jobs? And when they did talk about jobs, they talked about that they need to get a college degree so you can have a good education, and that did not resonate at all with 45 to 55-year-olds who no longer had that good-paying factory job,
right.
And Trump was saying, I'm going to bring the factories back.
Mm-hmm. I think he's spot on, Alec.
Yeah, there's a real debate going on now on, you know, among Democrats on the left about this very question, you know, how, whether there was too much emphasis put on identity issues, on rights issues, I guess another word for them, instead of on issues of class and the economy and inequality. It seems like it shouldn't have to be an either or. I mean, that it's not as if Democrats, you know, have to shut up about talking about identity issues or rights issues when they do arise. You know, at moments such as the Black Lives Matter movement, but there does need to be more emphasis put on the economic issues. Part of the problem really is that the Democratic Party has increasingly become the party of the parts of the country that are doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
Regional inequality is a huge problem in this country, that these gaps between places. You've got these cities that are doing so well that are leaving behind a lot of other places. And the cities that are doing really well have really become incredibly blue. And so you have a lot of people in these places who become kind of the de facto sort of, you know, heart of the Democratic Party now, who don't really realize how rough things are in other parts of the country, because where they are, things are really hunky-dory.
The other thing that must be very concerning, or if you are a Democrat and you want them to win some elections, you write at great length about what's happened with the party's Democratic declining support among white working class voters going back a long time. You talk about Lyndon Johnson and civil rights and anti-Vietnam protests and the crime wave in some cities in this country. And how we have seen Democrats pretty much write off the South. The past 15 years, you remind us, we've seen much of Greater Appalachia follow suit. West Virginia, one of five states that Carter won, went for Mitt Romney by 26 points in 2012. So we've given up on there. And now, lo and behold, and must be to the consternation of many Democrats, now you've got a lot of people in northern states who have forsaken the party. I mean, the Democrats can't win without some of these voters, can they?
No, they can't. And it's why I find it kind of confounding that there are still, even after the election, even after Donald Trump won, you see some liberal commentators saying, you know what, enough of, you know, I'm sick of these people, enough of them, we can't get them back. If they're going to vote for Donald Trump, you know, to heck with them. And we're just going to go to a new coalition without them. It's that just seems to me like a real mistake for the Democrats. It's going to be hard for you to win in future presidential elections without states like Wisconsin, Michigan, but even more importantly, really, it's going to be really hard for you to get back Congress without winning back a lot of these voters. There's just no, the way that Congress is set up with the gerrymandered House, and then even more importantly, the Senate, where you've got two seats per state, no matter how rural the state might be. Democrats simply have to be able to win some Trump voters, some of these white working class voters, if they're ever going to have a hope of getting back Congress.
Helen asks you, is there anybody on the scene, any Democrat, who you think would resonate with these voters?
Well, there's certainly a whole bunch who would resonate more than Hillary did. I mean, I think part of, we shouldn't overstate what happened in 2016, because it was a very unique situation where you had this one candidate who was Donald Trump, who was targeting these voters in very direct ways, not all of them pretty. And then you had Hillary, who was just really anathema to a lot of these voters. So many of the people I spoke to, these white working class folks, do not love Donald Trump. They see a lot of the problems with him, but they just could not abide Hillary. And there was a lot of sexism and misogyny probably wrapped up in that, but they just couldn't stand her. And so with her, with her gone from the scene, I think just about any Democrat would probably resonate better with a lot of these folks, to be honest. And although the one exception to that, of course, is Russ Feingold, who managed to do even worse in Wisconsin than Hillary did. And that remains to me kind of a mystery how he managed that. But the one person who, you know, just one example, someone, you know, not far from Wisconsin is over in Ohio. Sherrod Brown had easily won re-election 4 years ago in 2012, and is up again in 2 years, probably running against the same guy. And it'll be interesting to see how he does this time around. I mean, he's someone who has always done pretty well with a lot of these voters. A lot of it just comes down to being from these places. The Democrats they need to get the pipeline flowing again of developing politicians, elected officials who are from these places, who know what people care about, know mm-hmm. how to talk to people, and just do sort of give off a kind of authentic vibe of sort of getting it. Mm. And that pipeline's broken a little bit because they've been wiped out so much in some of these recent midterm elections. But they've got to get that flowing again. People respond to that. Like they can tell if you're one of them and that you get it.
Well, they're going to have to get it flowing pretty quickly because the midterms are just around the corner. George in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, George.
With my hindsight, I was thinking that one of the things that Hillary's campaign did wrong was when they did get up to those double digits, they kind of went for the mandate where they went after Republican states and took their eyes off somewhat of the states that they needed to have to win. They did it with Arizona and Texas, states like that they normally wouldn't win and didn't. I'd just like to hear his opinion on that.
Oh, absolutely. There's some real second guessing to be done about that. They went for the mandate partly because they wanted to make sure they were worried. The Iron Age is so incredible. They were worried about winning the Electoral College pretty easily, but losing the popular vote. And they knew that Trump would make all sorts of hay out of that if that happened. And so they wanted to make sure that they also won the popular vote. So they not only tried to go into red states, you know, previously red states like Texas and Georgia and Arizona, but they even spent money, and this is just incredible, they spent money in blue states to run up the vote in blue states, in L.A., in Chicago, and then even places like New Orleans. They were spending money in blue places in red states like New Orleans to try to drive up the vote there. And, of course, all that in the final, you know, analysis didn't matter at all. It's just excruciating if you're a Democrat to think about that miscalculation. The spending money in places like Arizona is somewhat more defensible only because Arizona ended up actually being quite close, I mean, astonishingly close. Arizona was substantially closer than Ohio, which is just incredible to think that the Democrats this year were closer there than they were in the previous, you know, great swing state of Ohio.
Mm. Alex, thank you ever so much for being with us and for all of your fine reporting. We didn't even get to the Russians in the Turk-Russians in Ohio, which is a fascinating story, but we'll have that another time. Thanks, Alec.
Well, thank you. Congratulations on your centennial.
Thank you, and congratulations on your George Polk Award. Alec McGillis covers politics and government for ProPublica, and we have on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, some of his articles well worth your attention. Historians will be looking at this election for many, many years, and he was up on the ground running the night of the election because he had talked to people in parts of the country that voted for Donald Trump. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and this is also our Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. You count on us for talk about all of these issues we do every day, and we count on you for these conversations to be on the air. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This is really your chance to pay for the programs you depend on. We're looking for 11 more pledges in the next 5 minutes or so. So make your donation right at this moment. Support the programs you enjoy. Do it at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Conversation with Alec. He's a wonderful prize-winning reporter. He's done really beyond the headlines reporting of the 2016 election, and we've covered it pretty thoroughly for a long time now. It seems like years. But I know there are a lot of political junkies in the listening area, and I know you've appreciated this. So please take a few minutes to make these hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you. Make your pledge. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And during this winter membership drive, pledges have been coming in from all different amounts, things from $10 up to thousands of dollars. And you can join the 9XM Leadership Circle with your gift of $100 or more dollars per month for the programming that's essential to your life and your community.
So please pledge at WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Lisa Nalbandian is with me. We're asking for your support. I don't know, your gift might be $10 a month. Maybe it's $20 a month. We thank you for all of your gifts.
That's right. And a great way to support WPR is by becoming a sustaining member. And as a sustainer, you'll make ongoing donations from your bank account or credit card.
Many people give $10 or $15 a month, but you choose whatever amount you'd like. You can become a sustainer at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
We're still looking for 11 pledges by the top of the hour. Make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and rely on right now. You can do it at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
You know, once in a while, you actually get more than you pay for, and WPR is one place where that is true every day. Consider a gift of $2 a day to support the radio that you love.
Yeah, when you think about it, it's pretty hard to buy much for $2, but at Wisconsin Public Radio, $2 a day creates a lot of learning, a lot of news, a lot of music, and that works out to about $60 a month. So make that gift right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. 2552.
And it's your gift of any amount, whether it's $5 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount, it is the right amount to give. The important thing is for you to pick up the phone or go to your computer and make your pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, 2017 marks 100 years of Wisconsin Public Radio, and listeners just like you made it all possible. So your gift right now ensures a bright future for Wisconsin Public Radio and the programs you rely on. So make your centennial gift, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And this pledge drive, ask for your WPR t-shirt. You can show your pride for the radio that you love when you give $10 a month or more. And that's at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
That's right. Pledge right now. 11 more pledges. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And all we can say is your gift really makes a difference. It keeps us on the air. We're 100 years old. That's a really big accomplishment, to be on the air 100 years.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. So keep it going. Right. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Thank you, Lisa. And thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this interesting show with Alec, and also to Colleen Duvall for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Coming up, the news. And then we're going to be talking about, the influence of hacking on the U.S. presidential election and cyber problems for this year.